Tony Baselli, TP Prisco by phone. JP, what's up, boys?
Hey, how are you, Frank? Yeah, we're going to have Pete on the phone. I think he's down in Fort Lauderdale tonight. He was in Cincinnati last week, and we will promise him in studio the full 2 hours next week. We'll have him the first couple of segments tonight.
Pete does a lot of traveling.
He does. At least that's what he says. So we'll see.
I was told that you needed to keep him away from Baselli, and the only way to do that would be to have him on
the phone. Well, if you ask Tony.
He's afraid of me, Rick. He's afraid of feeling the power.
The power of that Providence shirt in the tweet picture. he's coming from practice? Did you work him out?
Come on, Frank. You know, you got to keep the nose to the grindstone, make sure those boys are ready. We got Clay High this Thursday night.
Yeah, you were telling us that you weren't even going to sleep after Chicago. You were going to go work out.
Yeah, did you really do that? Did you do that?
No, I slept for an hour and a half.
We all slept.
He must have been tired anyway.
I slept for 2 hours. I got to get used to this trip. I slept for 2 hours that night and about 10 the next, by the way, to get caught up.
Well, I got an hour and a half and then about 5.5 the next night, so I'm really feeling great right about now. I still haven't caught up.
My only complaint, guys, is not enough food on the road.
No, really.
Rick, I don't know if you've looked in the mirror. You don't need to eat any more food.
Wow.
Tony.
Of all people to talk. Of all people.
JP, what's coming up tonight, brother?
We're going to talk about Bortles today. Got some reps with the ones. Gus Bradley told us that after practice. We'll kind of see what that means moving forward. Talk about the game this weekend, too, with Blake and Chad. Of course, Pete Prisco joins us, too, and I'm sure what his thoughts will be on the quarterback. Frank, that's all coming up.
JP Shadrick, Tony Baselli, Pete Prisco, Jaguars Monday starts now.
Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express.
Hey, it's the Roo.
Jaguars Monday with JP Shadrick, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
Here we are, Jaguars Monday from the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. JP Shadrick, Tony Baselli is in studio tonight. Pete Prisco about to join us over the phone line from South Florida. Your calls as well, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll get to the biggest stories of the week, including Blake Bortles. Had some reps with the ones today at practice. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up on that. Chad Henne spoke to the media today as well. His thoughts on Bortles getting those reps. And a lot to get to. Tony, how are you, man?
I'm good. You know, it's JP, you're exactly right. A lot going on right now here in the NFL in general, but here in Jacksonville.
Yes, sir.
You know, game three, preseason coming up Friday night in Detroit.
I heard about that.
So this week is pretty much the practice run for how you prepare for a game week. They're going to simulate a game week.
Okay.
So all that's coming up. Quarterback, a lot of talk with Bortles getting a lot of one reps. So guys getting back from injuries that we have not seen for a long time, both on the offense and defense side of the ball. So a lot of stuff going on, and that doesn't even – we haven't even tapped in what's going on around the NFL.
Well, let's – get to what's going on around the NFL. We go to the phone lines and welcome in the third member of this Jaguars Monday team. Pete Prisco joins us. Pete, good evening. Where are you tonight?
I was Dolphins camp.
Okay, you were at the Bengals last week, Dolphins right now. So how are the Dolphins looking so far?
Not good. They're not. You know, we talk about teams with offensive line problems. The interior of their offensive line isn't very good. Right now, if the season started today, their interior three would be Darren College at left guard, Samson Sotelli at center because Mike Pouncey's out, and then Shelly Smith now at right guard after they benched Dallas Thomas because he got abused by Gerald McCoy the other night. So not very good on the interior. That's
now, in fairness, though, a lot of people have been getting abused by Gerald McCoy this year in the early preseason, but even last year. I mean, you remember the talk, Pete, a number of years ago when it was Ndamukong Suh and McCoy at the top of the draft and how much better Ndamukong Suh was and, you know, McCoy wasn't strong enough, you know, could he be a bust and everything else. Gerald McCoy might be the better player. He might be better right now than Ndamukong Suh.
Oh, I think he is. I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, the Tampa Bay guards stink, and you saw that when Jacksonville played him, but boy, they've had a summer where he's been abusing them over there. So I would agree. You know what else he is, Tony? he's going to be one of the last of the $100 million defensive players, because he was one of the last guys to get, you know, the big contract before they changed the way rookie wage scales went. So his next contract is going to be a huge contract, and he'll probably end up making $100 million in his career.
Good for him.
It's not a bad
one. I'm all for it.
Yeah, and he, you know, he works at it. He's in the right defense too now with Lovie Smith over there playing that, you know, that old Tampa too. It's the same thing with Sapp. And, you know, the interesting thing is that Sapp and him are very close, and he helps him a great deal in terms of what he should do with his hands and everything else. So I'm with you, Tony. I think he's better than Dominguez too.
In that Lovie Smith defense where he's just going to be a one-gap three technique, get up the field and create havoc, he is going to be a handful. I mean, we saw it here, and he was creating havoc on the interior in just a handful of snaps because it was the first preseason game. He did the same thing. He's doing the same thing last week, and I think he's going to have a huge year in that defense.
No doubt about it. And, you know, so Miami's got issues on the interior of their line. I think Miami will be better because the offense is going to be better. And by that I mean it's not as predictable. You know, Mike Sherman's offense, you come out, you line up, and they'd go two over one side, one over the other, no pre-snap movement. It was very predictable. Now they got a little bit of pre-snap movement. You know, they can get different receivers lined up in different spots. You don't just have Mike Wallace outside. So I think from that standpoint, the offense will help get Tannehill the ball, get him out of his hands. Because, I mean, my God, the guy took 58 sacks last year, and he was hit a bunch more. So they got to be better protecting him. But I think all that will add up to a better offensive team. The running game isn't very good. Defensively, they have good down guys. The linebackers are bad. I mean, you know, they paid all that money for Ellerbe and...
Okay.
Oh, we might have lost Pete Prisco on the phone line. We'll get back with him in just a moment. You know, I forget what week the Dolphins come here to Everbank Field, but it's always interesting to see them here.
Well, if they're struggling on the interior offensive line, they better figure it out before they go up against Roy Miller and Cindric Marks.
No doubt.
Because we saw what happens when you have average to below average guards when we played Tampa Bay, and Cindric Marks was unblockable. And Roy Miller, the first two preseason games, was outstanding.
Yes. Two shoulders now.
Yeah, you know, watching the – and we'll get into all this in depth, but watching that game this past week up in Chicago, Roy Miller was outstanding. I mean, just dominant. He is – boy, you can tell he feels good. You can tell he's healthy because the strength that he plays with and the penetration that he's getting on the defensive line is outstanding and consistent.
And we'll hear from Roy a little bit later on what he's all had to go through mentally, physically, to get back and where his mindset is moving forward here. We'll hear from Roy Miller a little bit later. Pete Prisco back with us now. Technology's awesome, Pete. Glad you're back.
Yeah, I don't know. I could hear you guys, and I was talking to you, and you guys couldn't hear me. But
no.
I was saying about Miami's linebackers are bad after Wheeler and Ellerbe play poorly. And then, you know, you look at the secondary. Those two corners, they're good little feisty players, but boy, they're little. And that showed up last week against Tampa Bay. Big receivers against small corners and Finnegan and Grimes.
Pete Prisco is with us, CBSSports.com, senior NFL columnist. This is Jaguars Monday. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Buscelli. Pete is down in South Florida. Of course, the big headline here today, Pete, was Blake Bortles got some reps with the ones. But specifically, he took three reps with the first team in 11-on-11 drills and four or five more in 7-on-7 passing drills. Is this as big of a deal as everybody's making it out to be?
No, he should be taking all the reps with the ones. I mean, let's be honest about it. The guy has accelerated the thinking process inside that building. And it surprised a lot of people in there. They didn't think he'd get it this fast. They didn't think he'd be this good this fast. And I'm not saying he's going to be the end-all, be-all right away, but he's really opened a lot of eyes, and you guys know that. And to me, again, this is no slight at Chad Henne. It really isn't. It's just that there's a guy that's a potential to be a franchise quarterback sitting there. And I'm talking about Ben Roethlisberger-type quarterback. So you don't wait. You play him. We know what Chad Henne's ceiling is. You don't know what Blake Bortles' ceiling is. So you may as well get on with the process and find out what the ceiling is sooner rather than later.
Pete, the only pushback I'll give you is Chad Henne looked pretty good. I mean, right now, doesn't he still give you a better chance of winning?
Good? No, but he looks good. That's just who he is. He'll look good for a week and bad for a week and good for a week and bad for a week and get balls batted down and, you know, throw little short passes here and there. Chad Henne is a good kid. He works hard, you know, but he's a backup quarterback in the National Football League. You have a potential franchise quarterback sit there. Why delay it? And you know, I'm starting to hear that maybe they won't delay it as much anymore. You know, you probably hear the same thing. They might be playing him a couple weeks in if things don't go right, when necessarily they didn't believe that early in the whole process. Come on, Tony, you look at it. You watch the game. You sat in the press box. You can't see with your own two eyes. You know that. He's a better passer. He's a better quarterback. And he might not always look like it on the practice field. And that to me is very telling, and it should be very positive for the Jaguars. The fact that the kid gets better on game day, whether it's a scrimmage, whether it's the preseason games, he just looks better on game day than he does in practice.
Well, it's one of the great mysteries of the universe is the fact that Blake Bortles throws ducks on the practice field and has the tightest spiral that you can imagine in the games. And I haven't quite figured out exactly what the difference is. But you're Pete, you're right. I mean, listen, he is the future. And I can't argue, though, with what Dave and Gus have done, because they've created a great situation here for him to be able to prepare and get ready without all the pressure of being the starter during the OTAs and camp. So I think it was whatever happens opening day or at whatever point during the season, the way they've handled it has been outstanding. It's been genius. But you're exactly right. I watch him. What I love about him more than anything else, he sees the field. I mean, he sees the field, and I know it's only preseason, and I know everything's very basic, and he's not facing a lot of blitzes right now, and so the complexity is not there at this point. And he's going to see a lot of complex stuff, especially if he starts at any point, because that's what defensive coordinators do to rookies. But you watch him drop back. You watch him on the move. He sees the field. He makes throws. He pushes it downfield that I'm not even sure they're always the right read, but he finds windows and puts it right where it needs to be. He is a very talented individual, and I think he is further along than any of us thought. And he's looked very good in the first preseason games.
And Tony, you know, the throw he made, and Gruden downgraded him on it, saying he threw it into six guys and it wasn't a great one. He got flushed out of the pocket near the end zone. That was a fantastic throw. He dropped it into an area where only a good quarterback would even try and drop it in there. The guy caught it. He was out of bounds. But, I mean, that was a fantastic play. And even Gruden had to step back and realize, hey, wait a second, that was a pretty darn good throw. I mean, he makes those kind of plays. And to me, that's what you needed. And the only question that needs to be asked, and I think I know the answer to it, but do you think if he started on opening day and didn't play well, it would set Blake Bortles back 2 years? Because if you say no, then that's the reason he should play.
Well, and Pete, you and I agree on this. My contention is, if you can't handle it, then you're probably not the guy. And Blake Bortles, the maturity he has, the toughness, not just physically but mental toughness, which he's shown, I don't think much affects him. I mean, this is a kid who started off, I mean, no one wanted him out of high school. He went to UCF, I mean, a small school, under-the-radar school, and, I mean, he's earned everything he's ever gotten. And I just don't think the pressure and the spotlight and criticism or any of that bothers him. And I think he'll be able to handle it perfectly. I don't think it'll be an issue.
Well, let me ask you this, guys. If for some reason in Detroit on Friday night he plays that quarter, he comes in into the second quarter, into the third, and doesn't play well, things don't go well with the ones, and throws a couple of picks, does the talk kind of go away, or do you still throw? I mean, is this still a topic, you think?
Well, for me, I don't think it's fair to any player to base any judgment on one game.
Well, we're basing it on two games right now.
No, right? I'm basing it on the body of work I've seen since the beginning of OTAs through on the field and everything else. Listen, he still has a ton to learn, and he's going to make mistakes. If he were to start, he's going to throw to the wrong guy, and he's going to have some awful plays. He's a rookie. Peyton Manning threw more interceptions that first year than, I mean, anyone ever could even count. And that's part of the process. And that's where I think Pete and I agree. So you can't make a judgment based on one game. Whatever happens.
I agree with you.
Whatever
agree
happens
with
in Detroit. I mean, that's not fair to anybody.
100%. Yep. No doubt about it. He could go out there and lay an egg. Who knows? Maybe he's getting hit from the blind side. Maybe he gets flushed out of the pocket instantly. And you don't know. So you got to factor all that in. But from where he was at the end of the OTA process to where he is now is unreal. Even doubters of Blake Bortles, and there are plenty of them out there, because when he got drafted, that pick got canned by a lot of people. They've even come around on how he's improved his mechanics and his footwork and everything else. You know, Tony, you played left tackle. You were a tough-minded football player. if you had sat the entire first season and started to play as a, you know, in your second season, how much would that have set you back as a player?
It wouldn't have helped me. I know that.
Learn playing.
Oh, I agree with you, Pete. I mean, listen, but I'm not a quarterback, and all these quarterback gurus and experts say that's a position that needs time because of the mental aspect and everything else. And my whole point is you can argue it both ways. I can give examples of guys who started right away and were really good and guys who started right away and stunk. And you can go the opposite way, guys who sat and were great and guys who sat and were great. I mean, were awful. And so I don't think you can just make this lump them all into one. I think it's each individual guy and the maturity and what you have in front of you and what the team's like and everything else. And so I don't know. Listen, for a left tackle, I don't know how you get any better without playing. But maybe quarterback's different. I never played the position. I did in ninth grade. In ninth grade, I needed reps to get better. I know that.
Yeah, and you know what? Every quarterback I've ever talked to, every single one of them says that it's night and day what you learn when you're playing than when you're sitting on the sideline trying to grab the speed of the game. It's entirely different. So, and if it's all, to me, the only question, and I answer the question myself because they picked him third overall, is the psyche of the kid. If you're concerned about the psyche of the kid making mistakes, then you drafted the wrong guy. And I don't think they drafted the wrong guy. So from that standpoint, that's everything you need to know is just play the kid.
Pete Prisco with us. Pete, hang on. We'll be back with you in the next segment to continue this discussion. This is Jaguars Monday. JP Shadrick with Tony Buscelli. And Jeff Lagerman joins us now from Jaguars All Access Television tonight on Channel 4. Hello, Jeffrey.
What's happening, boys?
Big night tonight, right? D-Rob on the show.
Yeah, Denard Robinson, who actually is leading the Jaguars in rushing in the preseason, had a nice run last week, I think about 12 yards up in the middle. You know, certainly going to be a factor for the Jaguars offensively because of his ability to catch this year. Would not be surprised if he is also returning kicks, and he's also the gunner on punt coverage. So I wouldn't say OW anymore.
Right.
I would just put it maybe
RB.
No, WIP. Weapon in progress.
Okay. He's a runner. Yeah. He's a backup running back right now. And every backup running back in the NFL has to play on special teams. That's what he is.
Yeah,
that's right. But last year when they first started,
he's doing a good job.
There was so much going on. They tried to narrow that down a little bit.
No, he's doing a great job. He's going to be. Listen, I think Denard Robinson is going to be a good running back in this league. I really do. And I think he'll be very productive for the Jaguars this year. He has explosive speed. He's going to get better catching the ball. He's proven that he's willing to work at it. He's gotten better this year. And until he gets to the point where he can be your guy. If he ever gets to that point, you have to play special teams, and he's doing a good job of that, and I know Jeff will show that and talk about it.
What I'm anxious to talk to him about is why is it so different from last year catching the ball to this year? I mean, it's not even close.
Night and day.
You know,
right.
It is night and day, and I want to talk to him and get some real in-depth discussion about how that nerve damage that he sustained in college at Michigan that forced him to go from quarterback to running back and how that has progressed. And is that the main reason why that he's catching the ball now? Because, you know, last year, if he couldn't catch, you can't use him. And same thing this year. If he couldn't catch the ball this year, you weren't going to be able to use it. But this year, he's actually made some spectacular catches that have impressed everybody.
That's tonight at 7 on Channel 4, Jaguars All Access. You guys going to stay dry up here in the above?
I hope so. You know, I hope so. You know, we're also going to, in the film room, we're going to look at the two quarterbacks a little bit.
Good.
You know, look at two plays of Chad Henne and two plays of Blake Bortles. And, you know, it's an interesting discussion that you guys are having with Pete. You know, and the only thing that I would throw out there, would it hurt to let him sit to learn more?
Well, I think Pete's whole point is, and I'm not sure I disagree with it in the sense. Can you learn by watching?
Absolutely.
We just had the conversation. Is quarterback the only position that where that is? Because you aren't going to get any better as a defensive end sitting on the sideline.
No, you get better. I think you get better at any position as you work your way through practice, and the quarterback position is such a game of the mental aspect of it and not so much physical. I mean, playing offensive tackle and defensive line, there's such a physical element. Well, quarterback, there's so much more to it mentally. And what he's seen so far in the preseason is a very small percentage of the complexities of defense that he's going to see once he gets into the regular season. And I think this week is a pretty good challenge. You know, watched a lot of film on the Detroit Lions, and the Detroit Lions are not afraid to blitz. They're not afraid to bring different looks. This is going to be something completely different than what he saw in the first 2 weeks, to where he's seen a lot of cover two and a lot of basic defenses, where this week it's going to be a little step up.
Have a great show tonight, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Too.
Jeff Loggeman joining us. He'll be on Jaguars All Access tonight on Channel 4 at 7 o'clock when we return. Pete Prisco returns on the phone line. The discussion will continue with Tony Boselli. The CopyFax face-off is ahead as well. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Your calls a little bit later. Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Mornings on 1010XL 92.5 FM, home of the Jaguars. Welcome back to the HenneneAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Visit Jaguars.com and check out Inside the Jaguars. Program rolling along. We get into a normal game week routine starting this week. Also check out Leroy Reynolds, mic'd up from Thursday's game in Chicago. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, our thanks to Pete Prisco. Yes, sir.
So I got one question.
Okay.
And I don't know who, at this point, who decides who wins CopyFax? Is it you, JP? Is it you, Joe?
It's kind of a mutual.
Or is it the two of you working together?
Yeah, in tandem, I believe.
And now once you've awarded it, you cannot take it back, correct? I'm the victor, correct?
Well, it's like an NCAA violation later. You can't. The win still counts, but it doesn't count.
But you can't take the trophy back.
We'll take that. JP and I will take that under advisement. Yes, you could lose your trophy.
Based on new information I've received via research, Alex Boone's asking for $8 million a year, and no way in heck would I trade for Alex Boone if he wants $8 million a year. Not a chance. Not a chance.
So you're 1-1 now.
No. I have the victory. I won the title.
Okay.
It's been passed, and now I'm just giving new information that I've received via my research, internet conversations, and everything else, that he's asking for $8 million. And if I was the general manager, I would never, ever trade for Alex Boone for $8 million.
Tony Boselli.
Don't tell Pete I said that.
No, we won't, because he'll be back next week. You tell him in person. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. The phone lines are open if you want to talk about Boone and his $8 million a year.
Yeah, I wouldn't, because I don't want him.
Or Jaguars quarterbacks.
We don't want him.
We mentioned the quarterbacks earlier with Pete. Let's get to this. They've said from the start, and it's not going to change. Chad Henning's the starting quarterback for the team. Yeah, Bortles can get the reps all he wants. He can get a quarter with the ones, but
Chad
Henning's a quarterback. When's it going to change?
Let me tell you when it's going to change.
When's it going to change, Tony?
I'll give you the exact time.
Okay.
The exact.
Let's see.
You can hold me to this, and I guarantee you this is when it's going to change.
Okay. When is that?
When Gus and Dave say that Blake Bortles is the starter.
We can do all this talking about this debating. Pete can be start the kid. You know,
Blake Bortles could throw for 800 yards in a quarter and a half, two quarters with 8 touchdowns and set every preseason record. And if Gus and Dave say Chad's the starter, Chad's the starter. They have a plan. It's worked perfectly this far. Whether I agree with moving forward who should be the starter or not, it doesn't matter. Whether Pete Prisco, whether JP, whether the fans, it doesn't matter. Gus Bradley and Dave Call will have a plan of attack with this young player, third overall pick, future of the franchise, at the quarterback position. They have a plan, and they are not going to change the course. And the change will be made when they feel it's the best interest of this team to win, this team as a franchise long term, and the player, Blake Bortles, for his future.
Well, my question has always been, if that's been the plan from the start when they signed Chad back and extended him and drafted Blake and reiterated it then, why would it change after 2 preseason games against – second team defense. Why would it change? Yeah, exactly. Like, so why are people calling for the change now?
Because they want Blake Bortles.
Well, yeah, but it's not going to change.
It doesn't matter. When are fans rational? When does the media rational? The media and the fans are the mob. And the mob calls for things all the time that aren't correct. Sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're wrong. At the end of the day, You can't let the mob dictate what you do if you're the head coach and the GM. That's not what leadership does. Leadership has a plan and stays the course and makes adjustment as new information comes, but they stay the course. You can't be driven by the mob, JP.
That's great words from Tony Buscelli. Oh. It is. This is Jaguars Monday. Phone lines are open.
Every once in a while.
NFL 1-355-6351. We'll get to your calls coming up. Offensive line. You know, this has obviously been a topic the last couple of weeks of what's going to happen where in the interior. And it was Brewster early in the game. And then even Linder got some time at center in Chicago. And Mwanko went down with the ankle injury. He's out of the boot, was walking around today. It's just going to be an ongoing saga there, it sounds like, right?
No.
No.
They're going to say who the starter is. It's not going to be a saga. There'll be a starter opening day.
Well, by opening day, yes. But the next couple of weeks.
No, I don't think so. I think we'll have more clarity come Friday night in Detroit.
Okay.
Watching the tape, the best center right now on the team is Brandon Linder.
Really?
In my opinion.
Well, he played it at Miami.
I think he was very good.
Played for a short time, and I remember
The problem is he's our best right guard, too.
I can't play him in both spots. I remember during the call of the game, there was a run play where he grabbed a guy and put him on his back, right?
Yeah, he played outstanding. Now, Mwanko played very well as well.
That was very descriptive of my part, by the way. He grabbed a guy, put him on his back.
Yeah, I mean.
It was great. I wasn't there. I didn't see
it. He played very well. What Linder is able to do, he's a very powerful human being who has good feet and athletic ability to reach. A one technique is a shaded nose guard to the front side of the play. And he is able to reach that individual one-on-one. He does an outstanding job. He holds up one-on-one pass rush. Is he a rookie? Is he going to make mental errors? Sure. I mean, that's going to be part of the process with this team because it is so young. But I thought he looked outstanding. I thought Mwanko played very well. I think Mwanko, listen, he's more raw. He's not as powerful as Linder, but he's more athletic. He's one of the most athletic guys on the line.
He's a tall guy. He's a big guy, right?
I mean, he could play. I actually think Linder, Mwanko, given time, could play any of the three positions. I mean, he's that athletic. He's not. He needs to get better power ups top, better strength. And that'll happen. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But I think if he can get healthy, like you said, he's out of the boot walking around today. Him at center. Linder at guard is not a bad situation for this team to go into. It'll be some tough moments as far as the mental aspect of seeing things for the first time, especially when you get the complex blitzes. But athletically,
so you think he's got a shot to win the center spot, Mwanko?
I think there is a very good shot that Mwanko and Linder are both on the field.
Wow.
Meaning you might see Linder at center and Mwanko at guard.
Just because they outplay everybody, not just because, hey, let's play the rookies. Hey, play the kid no, doesn't
I
apply
think,
here.
I
right?
think they have a chance. I think – you can make an argument they're the best two players, and they're part of the best five offensive line group to put on the field.
We'll find out the next couple of weeks, it sounds like, if that could be the case.
That's another hard-hitting opinion. Next couple of weeks, we will find out.
We will indeed find out in the next couple of weeks.
You can't get that anywhere else.
Right tackle, Austin Pazter will go under the knife tomorrow to repair that broken hand. It was the fourth metacarpal. Hey, about that terminology.
Very good.
The top of the hand, the ring finger, basically. But below the ring finger, the bone in the hand from the ring finger. He'll go under the knife tomorrow. It'll be at least a month, but it's not a season-ending injury, which is good news. But for now, Cameron Bradfield's getting the play at right tackle, but you want to see Austin back.
It hurts because Austin was really having a good camp, and I thought he played well when he was in there. And coming back off the shoulder surgery, you could see him getting stronger and more confident as camp went along. And I thought he played, like I said, I think he did a very good job. I think he's going to be a good right tackle in this league. And I hate it for Austin because I love his approach, what he's done to make himself a better football player.
Because he was a guard. He moved over from guard.
The good news, though, JP, is that Cam Bradfield is not as good as Austin Pazdor, but he will do a solid job at right tackle. And his experience, it won't be too big for him. It won't be too fast. He'll do a good job, and we'll be okay in that position.
JP Shadrick, Tony Buscelli, this is Jaguars Monday. We'll take your calls coming up, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll hear from Roy Miller a little bit later on what he had to go through in the last year to get back on the field. Well, he's been on the field, but playing with one shoulder last year, with two healthy shoulders this year. We'll hear from Chad Henne coming up, too. He spoke with the media today. Jaguars Monday continues after this on Jaguars Radio.
Dan, Jeff, and Balls. Weekday mornings on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Whoa, Sarah, let's go on that roller coaster.
I don't know, Luke. It looks really scary.
Come on, I double dare you.
Make it a jalapeno double dare, and I'm in.
Deal.
Thrill seekers, rejoice. Pepper your taste buds with the zesty McDonald's jalapeno double burger for just $2. Two 100% beef patties, white cheddar cheese, and two kinds of jalapeno peppers. Don't forget to add on an icy cold Dr. Pepper. Prices and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Microsoft Surface is the official tablet and sideline technology sponsor of the NFL. While you're watching NFL games at home, Surface tablets are in the stadium and on the sidelines. Surface enriches the NFL by providing technology for players and coaches on the sidelines to help them make the right decisions to win games. And for fans at home, Surface tablets allow them to be more productive, including in their fantasy football leagues. The only tablet trusted by the NFL, but built for the fans. Get yours at a Microsoft store today. The most productive tablets on the planet do more.
$30,000 jobs, a $2.9 billion annual economic impact on the Northeast Florida region. At the Jacksonville Aviation Authority, they've turned their diversified four-airport system into an economic engine that serves the commercial, industrial, business, and recreational aviation needs of our community. That's going beyond daily. Learn more at flyjacksonville.com.
Now, at Ashley Furniture Home Stores, when you buy the special edition Ashley Sleep 16-inch memory foam mattress, a local deserving child will receive a free Ashley Sleep bed of their own. Ashley's goal is to donate over 300 free beds across the First Coast this season through Ashley Furniture Home Stores, a Hope to Dream program. Ashley Furniture Home Store, the official furniture and mattress store of the Jacksonville Jaguars, with three convenient locations: St. John's Town Center, River City Marketplace, and in Orange Park on Blanding at I-295.
Episcopal School of Jacksonville offers 6th through 12th grades for your student. The school's balanced college preparatory program focuses on building a total educational experience that is flexible enough for students to explore their passions and try it all. Episcopal also provides spiritual and character development in an inclusive and caring environment that helps prepare students for life beyond their school years. Hi, I'm Mark Brunel, and at Episcopal, I found a welcoming community that has challenged me to be the best coach and leader I can be. Our students are challenged the same way. Visit www.esj.org to learn more about this great community.
At Pepperidge Farm, baking is more than a job. It's a real passion. Each day, their bakers take the time to make every cookie, pastry, cracker, and loaf of bread the best way they know how, by using good ingredients, like real chocolate in their Milano cookies, 100% whole grain flour baked into their whole grain breads, and real cheddar cheese baked into their goldfish crackers. It's the little things that make simple food taste special. They believe in doing things right, and they just happen to love it.
Jaguars Today, your Jags and the rest of the NFL. Brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. 10 to noon weekdays on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Come protect the bank on September 21st as the Jags face the Colts at 1 o'clock. You got to be here for the amazing home opener and the best game day experience in the National Football League. And the world's largest video boards, too. Tickets going fast. Get yours today at Jaguars.com. Jaguars Monday continues. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli. Pete Prisco joined us in the first half hour tonight. He'll be back in studio and with an asterisk beside the records between the face-off early in the season.
Why is that?
Well, you had to turn your crown in from tonight.
No. We already said. That's okay. Given to me.
Okay. We'll get to that
JP,
next week.
That's get fine. Your facts right. You have no say in this. You're still a newbie. Don't stretch the boundaries right now.
Let's get into this Jags offense a little bit more. You know, we've talked about quarterback, and we will throughout the show. We go until 8 o'clock tonight. We haven't got to the receivers yet. Cecil Shorts III has been back on the field the last couple of days, progressing well, a couple reps here or there. But Toby Gerhardt had time in the game in Chicago. I think he had 6 carries in the game, an 18-yard burst at one point. He showed some flashes. The run game as a whole, where do you see this right now?
Well, let's look at the first offense as a whole, because we talked the whole story going in, JP, was the fact that the first offense had to show some productivity, get some drives. They really did not have a good first preseason game. And I think as you look at that Chicago Bears first quarter and a half, first half, they were outstanding. I think Chad Henning was in perfect, complete control. He threw the ball very well. The offensive line did a good job for the most part. Mm-hmm. There were some nice running lanes. Toby Gerhart, everyone talks about the 18-yard run. That was great. My favorite run of the day was the first one where he moved the pile to get six. And drove his legs. Brought the power that we know he has, and really the core of what he is a power back who has the ability still on the 18-yard run to explode and get to the next level. It was great to see Marquise Lee make some catches and get involved in the offense.
Early and often.
And Chad went to him. Overall, I don't think you could have asked for much more. Maybe finishing the drives, they settled for field goals in the red zone when you probably did not want to see that. But overall, I thought the first offense did a great job.
3 drives, 3 scores. I mean, you can't really beat that, except maybe for one other touchdown that would have been nice. But 13-0 after the first quarter, that's a pretty good start.
Yeah, it was great. And listen, it was and we'll talk about this in the second hour, all the penalties that are going on, because I think it's not good for the game, the way the officials are dictating so much of the pace and so much of – and both teams were helped by it, extending drives that led to scores.
And we'll get to that. Yeah, we'll
afterwards,
talk about that a little later.
But you look at this offense, and it was so important that they moved the ball and do it consistently. And because they were able to win on first down more times than not, it allowed Jed Fish to get in that hurry up and push the pace. And that's what they want to do all year. And it puts so much pressure on a defense, because when you have that fast pace, substitutions are hard, and you always get more tired playing defense because those guys have to run to the ball. They're always chasing. And so as an offensive lineman, you love that because it slows down the pass rush. It gives you an advantage throughout the series.
It was last year, of course, when Chip Kelly came in Philly, and they had the fastest, most plays in a game. I think the Jags were right behind them, right? At one point, they were second in the league in amount of plays in a game, I think, early in the season at least.
Yeah, and last year we had to slow it down because we didn't have the personnel to do it.
Exactly, but that was kind of the idea behind Jed Fish and his offense, was to go as fast as you can.
No, Jed wants – listen.
Not
Jed,
quite Philly fast, but pretty close.
Jed will go as fast as you let him. And he wants to push the pace and really put pressure on the defense. And I think it's great. I mean, if I was playing offensive line, I'd love it because it gives you a distinct advantage over the defense. It slows them down because they are so dang tired and you can't substitute the way you want to. But you have to have consistent plays because if you get down behind on down and distance, you can't do it. You have to huddle up. And you watch. If you watch in the first play of every drive, if they did not win on first down, they didn't hurry up. They huddled back up, slowed it down, tried to get some tempo and get some successful plays. But when they could win on first down, they were pushing it, pushing it, pushing it, and you saw a lot of success out of it.
Cecil Shorts III was back on the practice field yesterday and today, and he had a couple of reps here in each period, would move in and out and continue to kind of expand that as the week goes on. They'll look to give him a few more reps and then a few more, and then they'll see if he's available Friday. But if he's back and ready and 100%, how does he change the offense, at least the passing game here? Does he make that much of a difference?
I don't know if early, because you got to make sure he's healthy. But listen, having Cecil on the field, then it gives you, you have Cecil and Marquise starting and bring Allen Hurns as your third. It does give you a lot of different options. And listen, Allen Hurns is a guy that I still don't know how did not get drafted. How did that guy not get drafted in 7 rounds out of the University of Miami?
Right. And he said he thought it was going to be a 4th, 5th round scenario for him.
It's unbelievable.
It happened.
But,
he's the all-time single-season yardage leader in Miami history.
Well, I don't know what happened, but I'm glad it did because we got him. But adding Cecil will give more depth, and it puts a veteran on the field. I mean, you look at what they were able to do, the fact that they had 2 rookies, one of them being undrafted, starting the game, and Chad Henning was still able to have that kind of success. You put Cecil out there to give you that veteran option, mm-hmm. a great route runner and does a lot of good things, it's going to put more pressure on the defense.
And think about week 5 when Ace Sanders is back around and you have 4.
Well,
right?
Right now
if he's 100% ready to go by week 5.
Well, you look at the depth, and you got Allen Robinson.
Well, you talked about him. He's been on the sideline.
Once Allen Robinson's, I don't know where Ace fits in. I mean, is Ace better than Hearns right now? And Mike Brown had a great game. Mike Brown is so valuable to this team because he can play every position.
How many keep? Six?
I think you keep six because of the packages that Jed likes to run and the way they do it, and especially with some of the soft tissue injuries you've had. And so if you keep six and Ace is healthy, I think he's your sixth guy right now.
Okay, so let's go from the top. Receiver, Cecil Shorts the third. You got Allen Hearns. That's two.
Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson.
Marquise Lee's three. Allen Robinson's four.
Mike Brown. I don't know how you get
five.
And then you're going to
– Sanders, what about Tannen Doss, returning kicks?
Listen, that's why if Tannen Doss comes back and we get him healthy and he is a better punt returner, I think it comes down to who's the better punt returner, Tannen Doss or Ace Sanders.
And you won't find out about Ace because he can't practice the first 4 weeks either.
It's going to be very interesting when Ace comes back.
Mm. Mm.
Tough situation. You hate it for the young man because of a bad decision, he missed all of camp. We are all in his corner hoping he gets healthy and is doing well. And listen, he's a good football player. There's no doubt about that. But you look at what has transpired and the way guys have performed, it makes it a very tough decision.
And that happens with good teams. Good players get cut from good teams.
They do.
Right? That's a good sign. If that's the way this thing's going to go moving forward,
absolutely,
it means you're getting better.
You want competition, and you want good players competing to make the roster, and you never like seeing anyone get cut. But if you're cutting good players, that's a good sign for your franchise.
When we return on Jaguars Monday, we'll get into the defense a little bit. I haven't talked about much on the defensive side tonight. Your calls as well, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Hour 2 of Jaguars Monday, coming up after these words on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HenneyAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Back on Jaguars Monday, hour 2 underway. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Quarterbacks, quarterbacks, quarterbacks. That's the headline nationally around the Jaguars with Blake Bortles getting some reps with the ones. That's what the story's going to say, Tony. But 3 11-on-11 reps with the ones and 4 or 5 with 7-on-7 with the first receivers today. That's the real story from head coach Gus Bradley.
Well, listen, he's in the real test, and we'll see how much he plays against Detroit. And he's going to get
– they said a quarter,
a quarter,
I guess, right?
With the first group, and that'll be great. It'll be interesting to see, but it's still Chad Henne's team when it comes to who the starting quarterback is.
He's the starting quarterback of the Jags. He's been the starting quarterback of the Jags, and that
until
has not changed. Until
Gus and Dave tell us different.
Those are the only ones. Let's talk defense now. We haven't touched really the defense tonight. This defensive line, last game against Chicago, there wasn't as much of a sustained pass rush as there was against Tampa Bay.
There was no pass rush.
Okay. I was trying to be nice, Tony.
There was very little pass rush at all. Listen, the score and the effectiveness of the defense was predicated because of a turnover early, giving the Jaguars a bunch of plays. Now, they got a 3-and-out early, which was outstanding, partly because of a drop by Brandon Marshall.
Yes.
But they got off the field, did a good job. Offense took advantage of it. After that, against the run, this team was outstanding. They were very, very good. They did a great job up front. They controlled the gaps. There was no running lanes. They had no success at all.
And you ask them, that's what they want to be.
Yeah, you got to start there.
Run stopping D and everything else to take care of.
The problem is when they got in third and long, they couldn't get there. They couldn't get home. And
but at least they got them in third and long.
They did.
It's the whole idea.
And that, listen, Chris Clemens had some nice rushes once he got a feel for Bushrod, and he had to be taken out of the game to get – his pants fixed.
Something weird happened, right? Some
pant issue. They weren't long enough. They weren't
covered. Wardrobe malfunction.
Wardrobe malfunction, whatever it was. So he missed some series, or at least one series. So I think that affected it because when he got back in, he did get some nice rushes against Bushrod and got some late pressure on Cutler, but Cutler was able to get rid of the ball. Outside of that, I did not see a lot of people winning in the pass. One guy who was winning consistently on the run, though, was Roy Miller. He was dominant again.
Let's talk run defense. Yes. Red Bryant, new name from Seattle, holds the edge. He's a monster, of course. But people kind of forget about Roy Miller, at least the talking around. But you don't, because he stands out now. He has two good shoulders.
Go watch the film. All you got to do is watch the film of the first two preseason games, and you won't miss Red Bryant. I mean, Roy Miller, or Red Bryant, but Roy Miller. He controlled the center of the defense again. He had all kinds of penetrations, tackles for loss. He did an outstanding job. Now, he's not a pass rusher, but that's not what he's out there to do. He looks good. And you can see that he's healthy, and that's most important.
And last year he played on one good shoulder, played through it for his team. We caught up with Roy Miller the day after the Bears game on what he's really had to go through, and it's nice to be back on the field.
I tore my labrum to the point where my bicep was the next thing to go. And so just going into the games fearful of losing my bicep, already lost my labrum, that was, you know, a big concern for me, for my career. And my bicep, I mean, who wants to tear their bicep, you know? Yeah. That was on my mind every single game. Just trying to make it out the game. And not even that, trying to be effective for my team, you know, with one arm. That was, you know, the biggest thing, the cloud over my head every single game. It was just a mental fight. It was hard. Prayer, pain meds. It got me through, you know, and my teammates. But like I said, I'm so excited for this year. We got some great guys on this D-line, too deep. They're going to help, you know, make everything a lot easier for all of us. You know, we're going to feed off of each other, and hopefully we'll all just continue to make plays.
Well, prayer and pain meds kind of sums that up.
Right, I understand, Tony? That.
Yeah.
Listen, I shredded my labrum and it ended my career, and because it does affect the fact that playing with a shredded labrum like I did, and Roy did the same thing, you play too long, and I probably pushed it too long, and then a lot of other complications after that. And I know exactly what he's talking about, because my bicep tendon was affected, the joint gets affected, and fortunately Roy, he sat out, I think, was it two
last
games?
Couple of
last
games
couple of games, because it was enough, and he knew that his body couldn't do it anymore, and he got the right surgery, and they did a good job with the surgery, and because of that, he's back 100% healthy. But I understand 100%, because it can end your career. If you push it and go too far on a serious injury like a labrum, and it starts affecting other parts of the joint, trust me, from firsthand knowledge, I know what that is, and I know what it can do to your career. And I'm very happy for Roy that he was able to get through the season as much as he could. Knew when enough was enough, because he couldn't do it anymore, and he was really starting to jeopardize his future mm-hmm. as far as a player. He got it fixed. Kudos to the doctors who did it. They stitched him back up and got him back on the field, and now you're seeing Roy Miller at 100%, full strength, and he's a great asset to this team.
He wasn't bad with one arm.
No, he was a solid player, but you could tell. But he couldn't hold off the blocks like he wanted to, so he couldn't. Yeah. He just couldn't at times probably protect himself or be as effective, and he just had to, you know, just get by the best he could. And he was still a good, you know, a solid player, but he wasn't the player who could dominate at times that we've seen in the preseason.
You just can't move him. You know, he's just like a
he's a boulder.
Yeah,
he's like the rock of Gibraltar. That's what he is.
Rock of what? Say that.
Gibraltar.
Gibraltar.
Right? Same thing. You know,
yeah. Close enough.
Potato, potato. This is how you want to say it. It's my theory.
You just can't move him up front. He's immovable in the middle and can get in that backfield and really disrupt things. And it's almost like another free agent addition. A guy with two arms now is a different.
It's a healthy player.
There's no doubt about that.
And he said it best. They're too deep now. They were not too deep last year as far as strength. He's doing a great job. Another guy who's doing a very good job is Avery Jones. And that's the depth. I mean, a second-year player, undrafted last year, free agent. They kept him on because they saw the potential. He you can see his body is more fit. He's stronger. I think he's cut some fat and added muscle, and you can see the explosion out of him. He's doing a great job. We talked about Red Bryant. Tyson Alualu obviously is fighting and is not happy that he is no longer the starter, and I think it's excelled his game to the next level.
He's healthy too. Yeah, he has.
And he's playing good football. And so you look at the depth, and you got Ziggy Hood and Alan Branch. I mean, look at the number two line, D line, Andre Branch, Ziggy Hood, Avery Jones, and Tyson Alualu.
Not bad.
I mean, that's a good, solid unit that can rotate in for the starting four. And then you have Ryan Davis coming off. Chris Smith in the Leo package and be able to rush the passer. I think Chris Smith, he got some reps with the ones.
Yep.
Did okay. He's not. I don't think he's as effective as Ryan Davis, but he does a good job at the three technique.
The Ryan Davis story, and if you haven't gone to Jaguars.com today, John Osier had a story before practice today. He sat down with Davis yesterday and kind of went through his whole mindset right now. The story is amazing. You know, 3 years ago, but yeah, 3 years ago now, he was an undrafted guy that made the team with Mularkey and that whole crew here, survived the regime change, has developed since then into a bigger, faster, stronger guy, and has found a way to stick around, not only stick around, but making an impact going into now his third year.
Yeah, he's a productive player on third down. He's still learning, I think, to be an every down player, especially against the run. He's not as effective at the defensive end as a run stopper right now. Mm-hmm. Andre Branch is definitely ahead of him in that aspect of the game. But as far as rushing the passer on third down from the three technique, he is a very valuable piece. And he's a guy that I think that you have to keep active on game day because of what he can do on third and long.
And he can help push that middle on the lightning package.
He does a good job.
With Senderic and all that. It's good to see him doing well. Let's move to the second level now. Linebackers, of course, Paul Posluszny missed the game in Chicago. Was back on the practice field the last 2 days. Seems good to go. Was it different without him in there?
Sure. I mean, Thursday? Nate Stubar did a good job. Like I said, the run was great. They did a great job of stopping the run, but he's not Paul Posluszny. I mean, Paul's a very – I mean, he's a Pro Bowl player last year. He's an outstanding middle linebacker, and he's the leader of the defense. So anytime you don't have him in, it's going to hurt. You're not going to be as productive. But taking nothing away from Nate, but he's just not Paul Posluszny. And then the other guy that's getting back on the field, this we've seen him at practice this week a little bit, is Dakota Watson.
Yep.
And he is, you know, plays that auto position, which is the Sam strong side linebacker, which right now is Leroy Reynolds, who's having a nice training camp and has done a good job in two preseason games. But you get Dakota Watson back up there competing with Leroy for the starting job, and that's going to add depth and make it even better at the linebacker position.
And Gus Bradley today spoke about Leroy Reynolds in this camp so far, and they think they found the position for Leroy.
He's done a nice job, and now Dakota's back, so he needs to stay in that zone, you know, and just keep doing what he's doing. But, you know, he keeps learning. And the good thing about Leroy is, you know, if it shows up in a game, you see the next game, if it happens to him, he does it better. So I think, you know, but that's definitely a really a good position for him. I think we're set on that as a staff. That's a really good fit for him at that position.
He's playing well. He has highlight tackles so far in preseason. But can Dakota Watson come back in as his job? Is Leroy kind of on the outside looking in on a starting gig?
Well, it's Leroy's job right now.
Okay.
He's the starting linebacker.
Watson has to come out and
prove. He's got to come beat him out. I mean, that's how it works. I mean, Dakota Watson's – I mean, he was a very good player at Tampa last year, and that's why they – picked him up in free agency, but so far this year, Leroy Reynolds has proven that he can play that auto position, strong side linebacker. He's a big physical. He's very good against the run. Now, Dakota Watson is going to take that as a challenge and say, wait a second. I know how to play this game at a high level, and that's another great scenario for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You have two guys that can play the position and let the best man win, and I'm not sure you thought that going in with Leroy Reynolds. He's proven quite a bit by coming in and saying, listen, I believe I can start in this league. And Dakota Watson's going to have to come take this job from me. And if he does, we're only going to be better because of it.
And not only that position, but the special teams coverage units, too. We know what Leroy Reynolds
can do. Oh, yeah, listen,
there.
Leroy Reynolds is on this. He's on this football team.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he can do so much more special teams-wise as well. So, you know, the linebacker position, which I thought was probably a little bit of a weakness last year, just depth-wise more than anything else, mm-hmm. You know, you add Dakota Watson and an improved Leroy Reynolds with Paul Posluszny, Geno Hayes, and then Telvin Smith, who continues to get better. He's an explosive individual. Right now, I'm not sure he's ready to play first and second down on a consistent basis, but special teams-wise and third down
nickel
package,
guy, right.
He's really, really talented, and he brings something to the defense that you did not see last year, and that's explosive speed at the linebacker.
He's 218, 219, that's what he says his weight is right now, and that's as long as he can maintain that speed. That's the most important thing for Telvin Smith and his development. Just
if he could
stay
ever
fast.
If he could ever figure out how to get to about 230 with the speed he has, so you have to get to 230 muscle, he would be
Is it hard? It's harder than it is to say it, right? It's hard to do to get
I have
that
no
size.
Problem gaining weight, so I'm not sure. But I don't understand what's so hard
about
that.
Slow as Christmas, though, Tony.
Oh. Is that bad?
That's what I hear. I don't know.
You know, I don't – listen.
Is it hard to do? To get the weight up and keep the speed? I guess it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not easy, but I think if you put the right kind of weight in, technically you should be able to keep the speed and the quickness, because if you're adding muscle, which is explosive – you know, quick twitch, yeah, which he already has, and you add more of that, you would think with the added weight you'd be able to maintain the speed and the quickness that he has.
And it's not an overnight thing. It takes,
No. We're looking
next off season.
No, this is
moving
listen.
Forward.
He's going to be 218, 219 this year. That's not going to change. I'm talking about a year from now, 2 years from now.
He has a nose for a ball for the ball. There's no doubt about that. Tip ball, and the interception that Evans had, and he's always just seems to be around that ball. Let's talk secondary now before we get out. How do they play in Chicago? Very simple question.
I thought they were solid. Listen, and I want to spend quite a bit of the next segment talking about this, is the penalties. I think the NFL is tying the hands of the defense.
Dwayne Grotz had some issues with
it
that.
It was unbelievable. I mean, Dwayne Grotz got called on a couple penalties. I'm not sure where they were. Now, in fairness – on a play that extended a drive for the Jaguars, they called the same play against the corner for the Bears against Marquise Lee, and I didn't – I'm like, where was the penalty? I don't understand how you can call that, and I'm not sure what they expect defensive backs to do and how they're supposed to play the game, because they are calling it so ticky-tack, so close to the vest, that it's going to – in my opinion, it's made the game very choppy, not very – it's not smooth. It's not as enjoyable. Let them play a little bit. I mean, let the game go a little bit. And so it's hard to say exactly. Overall, I thought they did okay. I mean, there were some guys running open at times. And I'm not an expert. If Jeff was in here, we could talk about it even more in depth. But looking at the coverage, a couple times they allowed the either a slot receiver or the tight end to get into the seam. And from the best I could guess, and this is a complete guess, it looked like either Cyprian, who maybe read something, floated too far one way and didn't recognize it as quickly as he needed to, or the linebackers released that inside receiver too quickly. One of the two, and I don't know which it was, because the guy was way too wide open. That coupled with all the time that Jay Cutler had, it makes it very difficult. But overall, listen, you know, Cyprian had a big hit. He is such a good player, and he's going to be a good player for a long time. Winston Guy had the bonehead play, but – you know, he'll learn from it, and you can't do that. And it's you don't want to coach out too much of the aggressiveness from a guy like from someone like Winston.
The old saying goes, you'd rather say whoa than giddy up.
It's much easier to pull back than push. And Josh Evans, I thought, came in, and when he was given a chance, you know, he's competing, trying to get back that starting job from Winston Guy. So overall, and it was good to see Alan Ball back out there. It makes the defense better. He's still a better player at this point because of his experience and his game time than Demetrius McCray, who I think is going to be a solid. He's going to be a solid player this year, and I think he has a very bright future. And so overall, you know, I thought it was, you know, they were above average, they were good, but it's too hard for me to critique them because the way the officials are calling the game, I think it's ridiculous.
Sounds like Calvin Johnson will get some time in the game this Friday, too. So another challenge with him and Stafford for the Lions coming up.
Yeah, they've played some good wide receivers so far. Yeah. I mean, you look at the Tampa Bay with Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson. Last week, Alshon Jeffries and Brandon Marshall. This week with Megatron. And then they've drafted Ebron, the tight end.
North Carolina.
Yep. And so they're pretty talented at that position as well.
I know you're ready to burn about penalties. So
yeah, let's talk about
it. We'll come back.
What the league's doing is ridiculous.
We'll come back in a moment. You'll hear Tony Boselli go on a rant. I know you've never heard that before. Get ready. Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Escape. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Your calls as well, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. The phone lines are open on Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HenneneAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Get your group together for the best game day experience in the National Football League at Everbank Field. All-inclusive VIP access to the new North End Zone platform. It includes those spa cabanas and pools, special group ticket pricing, and more. Reserve your group experience today, jaguars.com/groups. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Jaguars Monday rolls along, 355 NFL 1, 355-6351, Tony.
Have you been in the pools yet, JP?
I have not. I've been by the pools. I was surprised when I walked by them. I think it was for the Bold City Brigade Void Party a couple of weeks ago now, that there are actual Whirlpool jets in the pool.
Are you a shirt-on guy when you go out in public and have to like get in the pool or the ocean?
You do not want to see this.
You're a shirt-on guy.
I have tan lines like nobody's business right now, Tony.
As fat as I've always as I've gotten lately.
I mean, I'm in good shape.
I'm always taking a shirt off.
I'm not scared of the body. Hey, I'm in good shape. But it's the tan lines, man. The tan lines. Totally.
You're not in good shape. I don't know who told you that, but they lied to you.
Of all people, you're telling me.
Listen,
I
can be honest. I'm honest with myself.
Penalties. Let's talk about these penalties. You know, it's a league-wide trend, and we sat here a couple of weeks ago before the first preseason game here at Everbank Field and listened to an officiating crew. John Perry was the official. Explain some of the rule changes, the emphasis calls in the preseason, and they flat out admitted the reason for some of these rule changes, especially for defensive backs and the 5-yard cushion and all that, and anything past 5 yards is pretty much a penalty. Now, the reason is because they want more offense, and they pretty much flat out said that. So now you're seeing the result of that with 14 penalties, over 140 penalty yards against the Jags last week.
But
is this
going
to change?
I think it has to change. I think they'll pull it back once the regular season starts. It was a point of emphasis this year to focus on contact down the field, past 5 yards, not only the defense but also the offense. So offensive receivers pushing off and everything else.
Right.
I am not seeing it, though. I'm seeing it called one way.
Only
perfect example. I'll give two examples. One, when we were on offense, Marquise Lee runs down. I thought he initiated the contact about 12 yards downfield with the Chicago Bear defender.
Okay.
And they threw the flag on Chicago saying illegal contact down the field, even though it looked like to me watching it and then watching the film the next day that it was initiated by the offense, Marquise Lee. Second example, Dwayne Gratz running down the sideline with, I think it was Weems maybe, or one of the Chicago Bears receivers. It was a fade pattern or a go route. It was down the sideline. Dwayne Gratz is in perfect position. There was some hand fighting at the top of the route as the ball was coming down by both guys. I thought there was more offense. In fact, I looked like it was almost a push-off to come back underneath to get the ball by the offensive player. They called illegal contact on the defense, Dwayne Gratz, automatic first down. I don't understand either of those calls. In my opinion, both of them were non-calls. There was no flag to be thrown. And you see it consistently around the NFL throughout the preseason, flags going everywhere in the secondary about illegal contact. Let them play.
But it's
the
not.
Point of emphasis is wrong. You guys have missed it. There's no reason to make the game flag laden like it is right now.
It happens every preseason. It's not just this year.
No, there's
right?
always a point of emphasis, and the officials get, you know, I don't know if they're practicing throwing the flag, you know, to get their arms in shape or whatever, and they use that as the opportunity to say, see what we're going to do. And then come the regular season, it gets back to how it always is called.
Do you remember a point of emphasis 96, 97, 98 that was really flagged heavily in the preseason that you had to think on off
JP,
top of your head?
I can barely remember yesterday. And you're asking me to remember?
I mean, come on, Tony.
I tried to ignore the officials. I wanted nothing to do with the officials when I played the game.
Why?
Because I wanted them to leave me alone. And I figured if I left them alone, maybe they'd leave me alone.
Did they?
For the most part, we didn't have very many interactions.
That's good news.
Yeah, I mean the points of emphasis I can remember is the ones that always stood out to me was the protecting of the quarterback more and more every year.
Because that happened kind of – that's when that trend
started
to happen, late 90s.
Not to how it is now. Right. And, you know, it's what's interesting is the point – when the point of emphasis is a safety issue. Helmet-to-helmet contact, protecting a quarterback, defenseless receivers. Those points of emphasis never change once the regular season comes. They're still going to call those. But it's the points of emphasis on rule changes. Like, here's a good one. Remember last year they made the rule you can't batter ram a, a defensive player if you're a running back?
That's right.
How many times
outside of the tackle?
How many times did you see really that call?
I don't remember.
Like once or twice. I mean, come on. It's just
everybody's talking about. Oh, this is how Maurice runs.
It's going to change everything. And I get the sense that the same thing will happen here. It's a point of emphasis right now. They're calling it way too much. It's ridiculous. They need to get all the officials in the film room and say, guys, we've gone too far. Back it up. Get more of how we called it last year when it comes to this rule. Let them play. There's going to be hand fighting. Where you want to call a penalty is if the hand fighting or the illegal contact affects the route, affects the play, gives one guy a decided advantage over the other. Not if it's ticky-tack. Let it go.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Another question about one of the plays in the Chicago game.
Yep.
Was the roughing the passer call on Harris.
Ridiculous. Never even touched the head.
He didn't touch the head.
And it was he hit him right as the ball was being thrown.
Carl Sheffers
needs his head examined.
But I think just going back to it, listening to some of the explanation from Gus Bradley and some folks, it was that he left his feet. Right?
Who cares? If you leave your feet and you don't hit him in the head, what does it matter? I can jump up and down and hit anyone I want if I hit him in the body. I mean, listen, I understand that. I understand what Gus is saying, but that's stupid.
But
what Gus isn't saying is stupid.
Well, no, I think he's saying what they told him it was.
But that's dumb by Carl Sheffers to call that. Look at the play. He never touches his head.
But when in doubt, they're going to throw the flag to protect the quarterback.
When in doubt, I can say you're dumb.
That's
my theory.
All right.
That's what I'm going to go with. I mean, that was dumb. It wasn't a penalty. He didn't hit him in the head. You got to let guys play.
What? Here's a question.
If you hit him in the head, it should have been a foul. You can't hit guys in the head, especially the quarterback. Can't do it. No way, no how. The amazing thing is the week before, Blake Bortles almost gets decapitated with the helmet shot, and they don't even do anything. Mike Harris hits him in the shoulder because he left his feet. You're going to throw a flag? My goodness. Show some consistency.
How many officials, and we don't need to get into official bashing as much as we are now.
No, most of them do a great job. It's one of the most difficult jobs in all of sports to be an NFL official. It's very difficult.
Everybody hates you.
Forget about the thing hating you. I don't know how they make half the calls. And here's the deal. They're right more. I mean, they're right a lot. I mean, some of the calls they make on the sidelines about the 2 feet in and catching the ball and possession and the bang-bang calls that they make, these guys do a great job for the most part. My point is, my ire is with the rules, the rules committee that made these points of emphasis, because the officials are doing what they're asked to do by their boss, Dean Baldino. Is that his name? Baldino or Balgino or what's his name?
Blandino.
There you go. Thank you.
That's
Dean.
Yes. I was going to let you go for a little while.
I was throwing out a couple other names, but they're doing what they've been asked to do, what was been dictated down by the rules committee. And I think it's wrong. I don't think it's being handled properly.
Would you like to be an official one day, Tony?
No. First of all, I couldn't keep up.
Well, not
run.
No, you don't need to be like a side judge or anything. You could be an umpire in the back. Yeah, look for holding.
No, maybe now because they're behind the play, but not in the old days where they're right in the middle of the action. I'd have got run over. Can't move quick enough anymore. I can't do it.
That's what happens.
The metal hips, they don't have the quick. I've lost all the quick twitch, fast twitch muscles in those hips.
When you start going off through metal detectors, that's an issue.
It is a problem.
Let's go to the phone lines, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll sneak one in before the break. John in Southside, he wants to talk Boone on the offensive line. What's up, John?
I thought we already discussed this.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you? What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to see, like, what would be the deadline if the Jaguars wanted to get Boone or whatnot? Like, what would the timeline look on that? Like, when do they have to make the decision back?
Oh, there's no deadline. It's just a trade. They could do it. Well, I mean, there's a trade deadline way down.
Like week 8 or something.
Yeah, I mean, 10 weeks from now. But this deal with the 49ers will have this thing wrapped up one way or another, either signing him or trading him well before that. And based on the new information I collected, I wouldn't trade for him.
But I think we're all in agreement that there's obviously an issue in the interior of the offensive line. This may or may not be an option for the Jaguars, but sounds like that it may not be. So,
well, it's interesting. If Blanco's healthy, the issues get less. They still have an experience issue, but I'm not sure they have a talent issue.
I think that's a good way to put it. Very fair.
So you're going to go through some growing pains, but we have known that going into this year that there's going to be growing pains. And anytime you play rookies, there's a learning curve, and it's going to take some time. And we're going to play some rookies.
Yes,
we are. Rookie receivers, rookie offensive linemen.
Rookie quarterback.
Possibly a rookie quarterback.
A lot of rookies played last year, too.
Yep.
And that's what happens when
you're guess what? All those rookies are better this year.
We'll get back to this topic in a moment. Phone lines are open. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Jaguars Monday continues after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HenneneAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
The Jaguars Women's Club, presented by Steinmart and Culligan, was created with the female Jaguars fan in mind. Members receive VIP treatment, including custom membership kits, exclusive opportunities, and a forum to stay connected with the Jags and other club members throughout the year. For more information, go to Jaguars.com/Women's Club. And remember, the NFL 101 event is coming up in mid-October. More info coming soon. So visit that site, Jaguars.com/Women's Club. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Jaguars Monday continues. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Biggest news of the day around the Jags is quarterback. Blake Bortles got some reps with the ones today, 3 in full teamwork, 4 or 5 in 7-on-7 work, according to head coach Gus Bradley today. Chad Henne's the starting quarterback of this team, though, Tony.
We have talked about that.
And ad nauseum, yes. He's the starter. He will be the starter on opening day. No matter how loud the noise gets outside of the building, that is the feel right now. And that's
as
the
way of it right
be.
Now.
As of right now.
But it can change at any point. But as of right now.
What would it take to change that?
It would take Dave and Gus deciding it was the best. I don't know. I'm not trying to be coy. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea what the barometer is for Gus and Dave. And they're evaluating the entire process. And, I mean, they know better than any of us. They're in the meetings. They watch all the practice tape. They're out there daily. They're talking to the team. They're talking to the player, individual players. I don't know. But I'm just saying, as of today, and that's all you need to worry about, is Chad Henne's the starter. And, frankly, as fans, as media, as people around the organization, there's really no reason to worry about anything else because Chad Henne's the starting quarterback. And okay, great. That's how we're going. We're excited about Blake Bortles. We can't wait to see him again Friday night against the Detroit Lions. Jeff talked about early in the first segment. It's going to be a great test. Detroit likes the blitz. They're very good up front. They have a number of good defensive line players. Yeah, Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, Ezekiel Ansah.
Ziggy might not play, but yes.
He might not play?
He might not play.
Okay.
That's hurt.
Yep. Jason Jones, the old Tennessee Titan. I mean, they have Darrell Tapp, another veteran player who's had a lot of success, 9-year player. So they have some guys who can rush the passer, and they're going to blitz and get after you. It'll be a very good test for when Blake Bortles is in there. So we'll wait and see. But right now, Chad Henne and I know we have some sound. You caught up with Chad Henne, did a great job. He's done a great job of handling the situation.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Gus Bradley, though, was asked after practice today, how did Blake Bortles look with the ones today?
Well, he did good. You know, I think the speed of the game, you know, it was good for him to see that. I know that we sat there, he had three reps in one period. Puz made a play on one. And as I was sitting back there, I thought it was really good for him to go against the ones like that, to get a feel for the speed, to get a feel for the rush. And, sitting back there and watching it, I just felt like that was good for him.
And, Tony, the question for you is it that much of a difference from the speed of the game, from the twos and threes to the ones? It sounds like it is.
At first, yes, but if you're a good player, you adapt quickly. I have people all the time says, how hard was the transition from college to the pros? Wasn't it so much faster?
Right.
Yeah, at the beginning. But quickly, you realize it's sink or swim, and you better figure it out. And you figure it out. If you're a guy who can play at this level, you figure it out, and the game slows down for you. Now, I know quarterback is more complex. I can know all the listeners right now are saying, you played left tackle,
you big dummy. Yeah.
You're not a quarterback. I get all that. There's more for the quarterback to process because of the position. But my point is if you're good, and you can handle it, the game will slow down. The game will slow down for Blake Bortles when he's running through ones. Is it going to be a process? Sure. But guess what? The game was fast for him the first time he ever went in with the twos, and he figured it out pretty quickly.
Chad Henne spoke to the media today. He is the starting quarterback for the Jaguars, and he said, yeah, there are some differences in reps with the ones.
Yeah, I think at times. I mean, definitely the speed's a little bit different. You know, the twos don't really run a lot of, you know, different defenses. You know, they don't show a lot, and the ones are more confident. They understand the scheme, so they can disguise a little bit more. You got obviously better players in those positions, but, you know, it's definitely a little bit different.
And he also said that, obviously, he's – what? Well, yes.
Yeah, okay. He said the most important thing.
Okay, there. What's that?
There's better players.
That's it.
Better players are faster. But guess what? You have better players too. And so my whole point is, you have better players, they have better players. As the quarterback, is it going to happen a little bit quicker? Sure. I go back to my point before. If you're good, go figure it out.
Henne also, of course, he and Bortles are pretty close, obviously, and it seems like it's going well.
Well, Chad's handled it so well.
He's a pro, and he was asked today, is it the right time to get Bortles some reps with the ones this week?
He definitely needs that opportunity, especially you never know what's going to happen in this season. You know, whether I go down or, you know, I'm not playing well and he needs to step in. It's a good test. It's a good defensive front, and, you know, getting some work with the ones is definitely beneficial.
And he was also asked to follow up. Hey, Chad, are you cool with this happening?
Absolutely. I mean, Gus talked to me about it, and, you know, he wanted to make sure I was fine with it, and I said, absolutely. You know, Blake needs to see what it's like, you know, with the ones and feel that tempo and just get, you know, some good time with offensive line and where he's going to set up and where he's going to, you know, throw the football.
And all this aside, you know, I kind of feel bad for Chad because everybody's asking him about Blake Bortles and not Chad Henne. Chad Henne's playing pretty well right now, too, which is fine.
Well, he played very well in the Chicago game. Now, the opener was terrible for everybody.
Right.
It wasn't just Chad. It was the first offense was inconsistent, and we talked about that at length. He was very good week one. Week two, he threw some great balls. I mean, Chad, listen, I said it last year at the end. I thought Chad did a great job the second half of the season with the hand that he was dealt. And the situation, it was a tough young team, a lot of injuries, guys, new guys coming in all the time, new system, and I thought Chad was outstanding. He has earned the right to be the starter. No one needs to question that at all because he's earned that right.
Okay.
And I give Chad a lot of props. I mean, I take my hat off to
props.
Him. Props. Okay. Ton of props. And my hat off to him. I don't know where this is going to end up. I think Blake Bortles will be the starter of this franchise sooner or later, and I know that's not a groundbreaking statement.
That's Captain Obvious material, a JP Shadrick statement
right there.
Well done.
But I say that because of this. Whenever that happens, whether it's tomorrow or a year from now, I had nothing but respect for Chad Henne the way he's handled this because he has shown what a true leader does and what it means to be a mature individual and to be a pro's pro. Chad Henne is an asset to this franchise as the starting quarterback right now. And if it doesn't work, if it becomes Blake Bortles' job, I'd love to see him stay here. I know Chad wants to be a starter somewhere. That's his goals. I mean, it should be. And so, but I can't say enough good things about Chad because I love the way he's handled it, and he is an asset to this team. And for Chad Henne, you look at it, what a great opportunity. Go out there and play great. Make it impossible for Blake Bortles to be the starter. Even though you know the following year he's going to be the guy. Because if you play that well, there's 32 teams. Someone's going to need a starting quarterback.
Bet. Everybody needs quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
Every year.
So I hope he lights it up. I do. Hope he does a great job.
I think everybody around here does.
Yeah, and I bet you there's not one person in this building, and there shouldn't be one fan in this city or anywhere there's a Jaguar fan that should not be rooting for Chad Henne to do a great job.
So that's the quarterback situation as it stands today. There'll be more going on this week. You'll see the headlines. Moving forward, let's go to the phone lines. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. John is in Keystone tonight. He wants to talk quarterbacks. Hello, John.
Yes, sir. And here's my thought as he's sitting along the sideline, there's got to be coaches around him. And when Henny's doing stuff, and even, you know, Stanzi or whoever, saying, you know, this is what you should do here, this is what shouldn't happen, and kind of go with him. And when I think he ought to be put into the line, if they think he's ready, is the first home game. Because I think that'll make him even feel more comfortable being at home. And then if it works out, then he's our quarterback, which
John, the only thing you got to be careful there, listen, you got two games. You go to Washington, and you go to Philly. Your two road openers, back-to-back, NFC East opponents.
Right.
What if Chad Henne plays great?
What if they're 2-0?
What if you win both games? What if you split? And Chad Henne's doing a great job.
Split would be fine, by the way.
Are you going to bench him for Blake Bortles? No. It's not. I mean, Chad's earned the right. Listen, at the end of the day, it still comes about competition. And I said this all last year when everyone's saying, well, we should give Blake another chance. Blaine another chance. Let's see what Blaine can do. And I said, why would you do that? Chad Henne's the better quarterback right now. He gives this team the best chance to win. And you have 52 other guys that are trying to win ball games. You have people that want to win ball games. So if Chad Henne comes out and plays great, builds on what he did week two of the preseason, and they're productive, and he's doing a good job, and he gives them the best chance to win, then he should be the starter. When Blake Bortles should start, in my opinion, when he gives you the best chance to win. And when Blake Bortles is better than Chad Henne, when you have a better opportunity to win, when the guys in the locker room have a better chance to get a W at the end of a Sunday, that's when Blake Bortles should go in.
Is that if Chad regresses and it's by default?
I don't care.
Or does it matter how?
It doesn't matter how. When Blake Bortles is better, he should be the starter, not a day before.
Jaguars Monday, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll take our final timeout, Tony. We'll come back and talk about Monday Night Football tonight.
Wow.
Another quarterback
Johnny
battle raging.
Manziel.
On the banks of Lake Erie. We'll talk about
I can't wait to see that because a lot of hype in Cleveland, and we got the better quarterback.
Hey, we'll talk about that coming up. Also preview the Friday night game in Detroit. Jaguars Monday rolls along after this on Jaguars Radio.
Country and Blaylock. Weekdays 4 to 7 p.m. on 1010 XL 92.5 FM, home of the Jaguars.
Final segment of Jaguars Monday. 355 NFL1, 355-6351. JP Shadrick with Tony Baselli. Let's go to the phone lines for the final time tonight. Paul in Arlington. Guess what he wants to talk about, Tony?
Quarterback.
That's true. Paul, what's up?
Well, it's kind of about the quarterback. Let's assume that Bortles is the next coming of Manning and Brady, and just take that as a given. But let's say the surrounding cast isn't. Let's say every time Henne drops back, one out of three times he gets sacked, or the receivers aren't as good as they'd meant to be. You know, maybe Henne is the sacrificial lamb this year. When do you make the choice to say, put Bortles in there no matter what and have him be slaughtered, you know, instead of Henne? I can't see Bradley or Caldwell saying, hey, you know, Bortles gives us his best chance. If he gets killed, he gets killed. I don't see that happening. Is that possible? Henne's just the sacrificial lamb for this year?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. Number one, this offensive line is going to be better than the scenario you're talking about. I mean, it's not going to be a free-for-all in the quarterback.
Not yet, but it will be in time, right? The line.
Well, I didn't see them a free-for-all on Chad Henne or at any point.
The first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, early in the Tampa game, it was ugly early, but. I mean, at no point have I seen that yet. Okay. That's number one. Number two, Blake Bortles is 6'5", 235 pounds. That's a grown man. Blake Bortles will grab the throat of half the defensive lineman and punch him right in the gut and say, get out of my way. I mean, we're not talking about a little petite Johnny Manziel type quarterback.
Bridgewater and his skinny ankles.
No, we're not talking about skinny ankles or frail frames. We're talking about Blake Bortles.
He's Ben Roethlisberger's second coming.
Forget Ben Roethlisberger. Stand next to Blake Bortles. He is a grown man.
Did you say grab his throat and punch him in the gut?
Yeah, I was just kind of make that up as I was
it's
going.
A little violent, man.
I like violence. I got to be honest with you. I enjoy violence.
So you got offensive line is better than we think it is right now. And he's a grown-ass man, basically, is what you said.
Well, I didn't say the A-word. My wife would get mad at me if I said that on the air.
That's basically what you said.
I did. That's what I meant.
Those are your two points.
That's exactly how I would say it if I wouldn't get slapped when I got home.
Okay. But I thought you had a third point. That's it?
Oh, number three is the receivers are – I mean, come on. I mean, these guys – I mean, they're not great at this point. But Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson are going to be good players. Cecil Shorts is a proven guy who has proven he can play.
He's in a contract year, too.
That is a nice level. Yeah. And so, listen, I think it's – and Mike Brown, I mean, he's not going to light the world on fire, but he's a NFL receiver who can get open and make catches for you. So, I think it's completely unfair in the scenario of our last call. I don't even know what your name was, but
Paul. Yes,
Paul. Sorry. I think it's unfair to the rest of the offense of the scenario you were coming up with. I don't think it's accurate.
Monday Night Football.
And if they're that bad, JP, sorry, yes. I got one more thing.
Okay, hit me.
If they're that bad, then the biggest issue is you got. I mean, is the scouting and Dave Caldwell and the. I mean, if you're saying the picture he painted was like this is the worst group of players in the history of mankind. No one can get open, and it's a Katy bar of the door every play for the offensive line.
The last two drafts have been awful, except for Bortles.
Yeah, I mean, right? Come on. I mean, that's just it's nonsensical.
This is
ridiculous.
Jaguars Monday. It is Monday night football night, and the Cleveland Browns face the Washington Redskins tonight. Johnny Manziel and Hoyer for the Browns will get equal time with the ones tonight, Tony. Speaking of a quarterback controversy, there's one in Cleveland tonight.
Yeah, listen. I'm looking forward to watching Johnny Manziel. I'm intrigued. He is a media darling. He causes a lot of intrigue and interest. I don't know what kind of quarterback he's going to be. I think he has a chance to be a good quarterback.
Have you seen any of the games yet?
I saw highlights of the first one. That's it. I'm looking forward to watching him play. And they do have a controversy. My guess is sooner than later, it's going to be Manziel's job. I mean, I just think the way all the message and everything here coming out of there, I think if I was betting, I'm saying it's Manziel. With all that said, I find it ironic, interesting, and intriguing that all the attention is around the second-best quarterback out of this draft. And I think it's very interesting. I think it's working to the exact script and plan that Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley planned out from the beginning. We're going to not make any controversy. We're going to make Chad Henne the starter. And we're going to allow Blake Bortles to develop as much under the radar as possible. The third overall pick, no one talks about. You know when they started talking about him, JP? Is after the Thursday night game in Chicago when when Jaws was sitting there watching him saying, my goodness, how's this guy not playing? How well he is doing? All the attention's on Johnny Manziel because the Cleveland Browns have said, oh, it's open competition. They're both going to get reps with the one. We're not sure.
If there's any hint of that in the first part of training camp, then the whole dynamic changes.
It changes completely. And I just find it very – it's fun for me to sit back and watch, and I got to believe Dave and Gus are sitting there going, all right, this is working just how we plan.
So there's a battle in Cleveland. There's also a battle in Minnesota, too. Teddy Bridgewater had a good game the other
day. Yeah, Matt Castle, you know, they're saying he's the starter right now, and he's going to start week three of the preseason. But sooner or later, listen, the reality is Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, and Teddy Bridgewater will be the starting quarterback sooner or later of their respective franchises. You don't get drafted first in the first round as a franchise quarterback. Unless that's the plan.
That's the deep thought of the day.
I mean, that's just reality. I mean, that's just
the way it is.
I mean, even you knew that, JP.
I knew that. I knew that one, Tony. The Jags and the Lions on Friday night at Ford Field. By the way, next door to Ford Field is Comerica Park, the home of the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers are in first place in the American League Central.
Outstanding.
And I believe they're out of town. But the same time as the Jags
Lions
game.
I hope they're out of town because if the Eminem Rihanna concert's going on the same time in the same ballpark that the Tigers are playing, it's going to be a little chaotic.
Yeah, heck of a party, actually. Yeah. But yes, Eminem Rihanna concert, same time, right across the street.
I bet you that'd be a good show. I wouldn't mind sneaking over to check that out.
Yeah, why not? I don't even know what Rihanna's saying. I have no idea either.
But
all I know is that Matt Kemp broke up with her. The next year, he almost won the MVP.
All I know is they both win a lot of music awards, so they must be pretty good at what they do.
So, Jags and Lions, back to the real show in Ford Field on Friday night. The ones are going to go 2-3 quarters in this game, as we said. Henne will get 2 quarters. Bortles will get a quarter-ish with the ones. But you just want to see a little fuller of an offense and overall with the ones this week, right? This is the final real dress rehearsal. What do you really want to see?
Well, I just wanted to build on what they did in Chicago, which is being consistent, move the ball, hurry up offense, push the tempo.
Move the ball.
Yeah, I want to see them be more effective in the red zone. Score touchdowns. Don't kick field goals. Field goals are bad. Nothing against you, Josh Gobe, but if you're inside the 20, I don't want to see you. Let's get the ball in the end zone. We got to score points. We got to get 7, not 3 at the end of the day. So looking for that. It'll be fun. I think that this is the first week they'll game plan somewhat. They're going to have a little bit of a game plan, so I think you'll see more of what Jed Fish wants to do, a little bit more creativity. He's not going to show everything. Got to keep some of the secrets, you know, up the sleeve.
Yeah, sure.
Some of the tricks up the sleeve before you come out opening day in D.C.
In Philly,
D.C. second week. But I think, and defensively, you'll probably see some more blitzing.
Yeah, you'll see a little more of that this week.
Right? A little more creativity by Bob Babich on the defense side of the ball. So you'll get a fuller picture of what this team's going to look like.
But it won't be a full slate of blitzes.
You got to hide stuff. You got to keep stuff secret. You can't show everything before you get to Philly. You got to keep some secrets for Chip Kelly to think about.
That's true.
Yeah, you don't show all your cards.
After this game, though, the first round of cuts come, too, down to 75.
Yeah, those are easy ones. I mean, I shouldn't say that. They're easier in the sense of picking who you're going to cut. It's always hard for both Gus and Dave and the coaches to sit down with guys and say goodbye, especially with all they've invested. So that's never easy. I don't care what cuts. But as far as rounding out your roster, these are a little bit easier decisions to make when you get down to that last – to get down to that last 53-man roster, those last couple roster spots. So those are – those are tough because now you have to look at special teams. You have Mike Mallory, the special teams coordinator, and they're fighting for his guys. But where do they fit on either side of the ball? And, what does our game day or active 45-man roster look like? That goes into a lot of how you build the 53 out. And we'll get into all that next week after this game before the Falcons come to town. But my guess is Dave really already knows who are going to be cut down to that 75.
Already, and no matter what – well, some things in the game could change it.
No, I don't think so.
It's already done.
Outside of even injuries, I don't think would affect it because those affect your last 53 down to the 53-man cut. One thing I would be shocked, and we'll have to look back next week when we have the show on Monday night, how many of the guys who got cut played in the game because you don't want a guy to get hurt – if you're going to, you're going to cut them. That'll be interesting to look at on Monday.
We'll watch that. Tony, well done. We'll see you next week. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
JP, I look forward to it.
Dan Edwards is a senior VP of communications for the Jags. Ryan Bonifant back in the studio. Joe Fortunato, Jaguars manager of radio. Our thanks to Pete Prisco. And for Tony Buccelli, this is JP Shadrick. Thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.